You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Dan Paas. Dan, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me.
So, Dan, I want to ask you about your work, of course, and we're going to discuss that, but I know you're talking to me from Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to more people from Seattle lately. How do you see Seattle as a as an arts community? I mean, I know you're working there too, but what's the arts community vibe of Seattle as compared to other cities that you know?
Well, you know, I was living in Chicago for the past 15 years, and I'm on my third year here in Seattle, so it really feels like I haven't been here very long. And Chicago is just a bigger city with more offerings, and so you can't help but kind of compare the two as cities. So Seattle, I think that there's some really amazing smaller galleries that are doing some really good work around, in particular, showing artists of color, showing indigenous artists, and so there's a lot of, I think there's a light has been shown on that deficit in showing the work of those kinds of artists in the city. So that's really, really cool. And, you know, it feels like Seattle is still on the edge of kind of expanding its arts community. But I do think that there's some incredible curators that are doing some wonderful work. There's some cool stuff happening here.
That is exciting. So let's talk about what you're working on now. And if it's more than one thing, let me know. I'm curious.
I have several projects that are kind of happening simultaneously that, but the one most recent that I'll talk on is called, The Sun Never Knew How Great It Was Until It Struck the Side of a Building. And this project began with my residency at Seattle University so last year I was their inaugural high resolution media artist in residence. And as part of the residency, I did a year's worth of research. I taught a class. I also worked with Creative Justice, with whom I still work with, which is an arts organization that works with currently and formerly incarcerated youth. And they work in sort of quarterly terms on arts projects that can be used towards community hours, but also really working on kind of the day-to-day life of young people that have sort of gone through the trauma of incarceration. And so in that project, back to the sort of larger project at hand, not larger project, it's consistent with that. So the project is named after a quote from Louis Kahn, who was a modernist architect, and though not necessarily working officially in brutalism, you can really see a lot of influence of brutalism in his work. And the project began with me researching the history of how brutalism finds its way to the United States through material decisions and material choices as an institutional form. And so I was working at Seattle University, researching Seattle University's relationship to the city of Seattle. So I should say that my work, I use vernacular imaging production to center histories of race, nationality, and passing. And so my work investigates otherness and its relationship to place-based work. And sort of in short, I work in photography and expanded forms of new media, thinking about site specificity, technology, and equity. So I live in Seattle. I live three blocks from Seattle University, and I live a block and a half from King County Youth Detention Center. And they are currently, and since 2012, have been building a new facility right next door to the old facility, a new detention center, which is kind of how this work not kind of, it's how this work started, walking to Seattle University, walking by the detention center. And I happened to walk by the detention center and the new one being built on the day that they broke through the concrete in the dormitory section, the concrete that they broke through to create a window in the dormitory section. And I started really thinking about how sort of the construction of light. And so in my practice, thinking through the photographic and its relationship to shadow and light and the history of its of how photography in general has sort of been taught, it is really historically prioritized a kind of white male canon. And so as an educator, I work to push up against that. And so I always teach and prioritize the shadow space, thinking through the shadow space as an embodied space, a space that then creates light. And sort of in that history of Sojourner Truth's I Sell the Shadow to Support the Substance. So I walk by this building on the day that they're creating a window and started thinking about how I was walking to the university and thinking about how in these institutional spaces, the engineering of shadow and light and how that asks, how the larger institutions then through architectural forms ask us to perform. And I started thinking about how young people in incarceration then, you know, how are they asked to perform in the light? And then what happens for them in the shadow space? Is it a more embodied space? Do they have a minute where they're not being asked to perform in what it might mean to be, you know, to have good behavior, right? So the work included sort of a constellation of works and included a 4K experimental film with live orchestral accompaniment where I collaborated with students at Seattle University to create the score for this film that's still underway. I'm still working on the film. I created a series of photograms, which are basically creating negatives. And whenever I teach photography or video since 2012, I teach photograms. I teach the negative, the creation of a negative process as kind of the advent, not kind of, as the advent of the modern era. However, I reframe it and prioritize the shadow space. So I exhibited demos that I have used in years past because I'm always saving them to when I teach photograms. And so I taught that process to the students at Seattle University, in addition to the students, the young people that are working with Creative Justice. And then the work included a set of roving stairs and ceramic lanterns that mimic, or how I think of them as sort of inverted panopticons. And so the first body, or the first iteration of the work was exhibited in December in a solo exhibition through Seattle University as a culmination of the residency. And then the second iteration and the second solo exhibition of the work in a kind of new iteration was exhibited in April at Holding Contemporary in Portland, Oregon. So I'm still working on this project. I'm working on the film, and I'm in the process of collecting interviews from people living right across the street from these two facilities that now take up an entire city block. And
wow.
I know it's immense. And in addition to that, I was able to get or have access to a national registry of municipal architectural projects, municipally supported architectural projects across the nation. And so I'm in the process of sifting through all of that material to think about how these kinds of architectural forms, in particular carceral architecture, youth detention centers, their relationship to the city, how they're designed. And I'm sort of planning on making a series of sculptures they're made from photographs that mimic or that fulfill the plans, the architectural plans across the U.S. So I want to sort of do a larger kind of look at how youth detention centers function across the U.S. For instance, in Omaha, there are 3 youth detention centers within 10 miles of each other in Omaha, Nebraska. Wow. And yeah, so, and I know here in Seattle, their current youth detention center that was built in the 40s, or late 30s rather, it's only at a third of occupancy. And the city of Seattle has a no detention goal. And yet in 2012, they petitioned for municipal funds to begin construction on a new facility. And so then last year, they petitioned for more money. So the initial ask was like around $240 million. And then last year, or very recently, maybe it was last fall, last summer, they petitioned for more funds because they were over budget. And this facility has, even though all the research that's been done around detention and around youth sort of suffering the trauma of being in detention, they still built this new facility. And this new facility will house the courts within it, and which is also really troublesome, that in the same building that these young people are sentenced, they then walk to the other side of the building and they're then detained for however long they need to serve their time. And which is just also really troubling to think about. And there, you know, there's been a huge amount of research on this as well. So it's not something that I'm just imagining, right? And so I'm thinking through how these spaces, and through the lens of photography and new media, through this idea of the photographic, how these embodied spaces are functioning.
Very, very interesting. So you mentioned Lewis Kahn at the beginning,
yes.
And your research in brutalism. So how does he relate to the film or this process? Because it sounds like you were researching him, and of course I've seen that film, My Architect, and
exactly.
I've seen a lot of his buildings, and it's a pretty amazing person, and how he looked at light as well. What was his relationship to the film or the project?
Right. So I saw that film, and also kind of a really, it's interesting, kind of a hard narrative to watch, especially told from his estranged son. And I thought his quote, "The son never knew how great it was until it struck the side of a building," was so profound to me, because though he's not working in brutalism, right, at this point, you know, we're moving sort of out of brutalism, and brutalism doesn't become an official form in the United States as a thing historically, right? But it is this idea that these kinds of architectural forms they're designed by people, and that people can, you know, in this history of modernism, right, that people, there are larger sort of imperial decisions that are made around structures that inhabit our life, that we inhabit, that affect our life. And so for me, this quote and that he's working in the history of modernism and the tenets of modernism that I in fact am pushing up against. So for me, this project directly challenges this notion of a singular narrative, the modernist notions around design, around the modernist architectural form, specifically as it would relate to brutalism. So for me, him as a figure is one that I'm contesting in this, because he's working in this way, and so he becomes a symbol of that to me.
Very interesting. And so the film is in progress now, and it seems like the film pulls together a lot of these threads. I mean, I know you're working on other things, but is the film, do you see it as kind of an umbrella project over all of this?
Yeah, it is the thing that is kind of the connective device amongst all of these works. And so what that includes is when I was in residence, I collaborated with improvisational dancer Donnell Williams on a series of photo shoots where we worked and we invited, so we shot during the day as well as we shot at night, and we shot on the soccer field of Seattle University, and it was open to the community, both of these events, and as this public participatory dance in this idea of thinking about accumulating movement within this space, this idea that this sort of, I was really at the heart of this film is thinking through what play looks like and what freedom looks like of movement. And so Donnell worked with us to develop a series of gestures that then became a series of improvisational choreographies. And I participated in the dance and filmed it on drone technology. And so that's sort of the nexus of what you're seeing in the first component of the film. And with that, I'm expanding it to include animation in addition to these interviews. So right now I kind of have a lot of work to do to move this, to add these more of these elements literally that cite the detention center, because right now this visual component of the work cites Seattle University, because in specific I was looking at in the project the relationship of Seattle University to then the detention center, which they are a block from one another, and the same construction company that builds for Seattle University built for the detention center. And so So right now that component of the film houses that dance, and I would like to expand it so it has a little bit more of a comprehensive narrative around the entirety of the work.
So one more question about the film, because films are, you know, they're complex to make. How is the film being funded? That it seems like a huge project, and funding is so important, and these are, you know, social issues that aren't about making a blockbuster film, obviously. Mm-hmm. How do you fund these? How is the film funded?
The initial part of the work was funded through the residency and with the support of Seattle University. So that residency subsidized several artist talks and a stipend to really begin the work. So for now, I'm at the point where I'm funding it. But I am applying. I have applied for several grants in the hopes that I can get some kind of support. But it's also kind of a tricky endeavor, right? To apply for funding locally to municipal agencies that are then affiliated with city government when you yourself are researching city government's relationship.
When it's a critique of those. Why it's interesting. And I've interviewed other people who are making films that are, you know, social critiques or political critiques. And so that's why funding becomes an issue, because
Absolutely.
You know, where do the grants come from? But sometimes, yeah, it's private, and oftentimes it's, as you're saying, it's self-funded by the artist, of course.
Right.
Well, that's exciting. So, is there anything else? Because there's going to be links in here to this, and I wanted to ask you one more question about what you're reading, but is there anything else you want to plug or point listeners to? Again, there'll be links in the interview text so people can go anywhere you want, but is there anything else you want to say for people who are in Seattle and could see some of your work or anyone else?
Well, for right now, my website, definitely check that out. And I'm working on towards a solo exhibition in Tennessee in 2020. But in addition to that, I'll also be in a group exhibition in next 2020 as well. And that's going to be affiliated with Vanderbilt University. So I'm hoping that in one or the other of those two exhibitions, I'll show an updated version of the film. But if anything, I have an events page on my website to sort of that I keep continually posting events that I'm involved in. And yeah, so for now, I'm kind of just in a wonderful making mode and application mode.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
I want to ask you what you're reading at the moment. What's occupying your nightstand?
Well, you know, I have my summer reading list that I'm trying to not stray from, but I'm reading, actually I just started reading All About Love, the Bell Hooks novel, or Bell Hooks series of would this be considered a novel? A series of essays, right? I'm also reading Robin James's Resilience and Melancholy. And Stolen Life by Fred Moten. And I'd like to dig into, I could read you this list literally there of, you know, this pile of books that I'm looking at right now. Heartberries by Therese Malhot, I think that's how you pronounce her last name. And yeah, I can read more. So another
that's
one.
Exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I'm excited to have time to really try and knock these out, you know?
Well, wonderful talking to you. I wish you great, great luck on the success on the film and the rest of your projects. And I want to thank you for talking with me, Dan. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. It's been lovely to chat with you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.